from my arms, enclosing them around himself like a blanket.
Roy. She wasn't like how I remembered her. It wasn't just her man's short hair or the spread in her hips, though these are things I noticed. She was different now, sadder. Even her scent was altered. The lavender endured, but behind it was something earthy or woodsy. The lavender was from the oil she kept in a crystal bottle on the dresser. The wood chip scent radiated from beneath her skin. I recollected Davina, who welcomed me with accepting arms and a feast fit for a man home from the war. Celestial didn't know I was coming, but I wanted her to sense I was on my way and prepare a table for me. I fell asleep in her lap, and she let me rest until I opened my eyes of my own accord. Night falls early in the winter. It was around 8 o'clock, and outside it was as black as midnight.
So, she said, how do you feel?
Then she looked embarrassed.
I know it's a basic question, but I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
You could say that you're glad to see me, that you're glad I'm out.
I am,
she said.
I'm so happy that you're out. This is what we've all been praying for while we kept Uncle Banks working on it.
She sounded like she was pleading with me to believe her, so I held my hand up. Please don't. Now I sounded like I was the one on my knees. I don't want for us to talk like this. Can we sit in the kitchen? Can we sit in the kitchen, talk to each other like a man and his wife? Her face lost its softness as her eyes darted around the room, suspicious and maybe frightened. I won't touch you, I said, though the words were as bitter as baking chocolate. I promise. She moved toward the kitchen like she was marching toward a firing squad.
Did you eat?
The kitchen was how I remembered. The walls were the color of the ocean, the round table a pedestal topped by dark glass. Four leather chairs were evenly spaced. I remembered what I assumed those seats would be occupied by our children. I remembered when this was my house. I remembered when she was my wife. I remembered when my whole life was ahead of me, and this was a good thing.
I don't have anything to cook, she said. Not over here. I usually eat.
She trailed off. Next door? I asked. Let's get this part over with. It's Andre. Say yes, so we can go from there. I sat in the chair that I used to think of as my spot, and she perched on the countertop.
Roy,
she said like she was reading a script.
I am with Andre now. It's true.
I know, I said. I know, and I don't care. I was away, you were vulnerable, 5 years is a long time. If anybody knows how long 5 years is, it's me. I went to the counter where she sat, positioning myself in the V of her legs. I reached for her face. She closed her eyes, but she didn't pull away. I don't care what you did when I was gone. I only care about what our future is. I leaned in, kissing her lightly.
That's not true,
she said as I felt the brush of her dry lips.
That's not true. You do care. It matters. Everybody cares.
No, I said. I forgive you. I forgive you for everything.
It's not true, she said again.
Please, I said. Let me forgive you. I angled toward her again and again. She didn't move. I placed my hands on her defenseless head, and she didn't stop me. I kissed her every way I could think of. I kissed her forehead like she was my daughter. I kissed her quivering eyelids like she was my dead mother. I kissed her hard on her cheeks like you do before you kill someone. I kissed her collarbone the way you do when you want more. I pulled her earlobe with my teeth the way you do when you know what someone likes. I did everything. And she sat as pliable as a doll. If you let me, I said, I can forgive you. Starting my circuit of kisses again, I made my way to her neck. She shifted her head slightly so I could touch my nose where her pulse beat close to the surface. But the thrill wore off fast. Like the rush of a homemade drug, the way the cheap stuff hits you hard but leaves you hungry in an instant. I moved to the other side, hoping she would tilt her head the opposite way, allowing me access to all of her.
Just ask me, I said, my voice barely more than a rumble in my chest. Ask me and I will forgive you.
I held her now. She was limp. But she didn't resist.
Ask me, Georgia, I said. Ask me, so I can say yes. The bell rang 7 times, one after the other, with no break in between. I jumped at the first note, and so did Celestial, righting herself quickly like she had been caught. She slid off the counter, all but sprinting to the front door, throwing it wide for whomever she might find there. It was the girl from the shop, the one who looked like the past. She was holding a baby who enjoyed mashing a doorbell. He was a plump little fellow, bright-eyed and pleased.
Tamar,
Celestial said,
you're here. Didn't you tell me to come by with the muslin from the wholesale place?
The shop girl stepped into the foyer as the little boy reached for her hoop earrings, the left one dangling a key like Janet Jackson's back in the day.
Jelani, you want to say hello to Auntie Celestial?
She shifted the baby in her arms.
I hope you don't mind me bringing him.
No,
Celestial said in a rush.
You know, I'm always tickled to see this little man. He wants his Uncle Dre,
Tamar said, struggling with the squirming baby.
You okay, girl? You look stressed, like this is a hostage situation.
She laughed a merry little laugh until she noticed me standing there in the hallway.
Whoa,
she said.
Hi?
Celestial paused before pulling me into the room by my arm.
Tamar, Roy, Tamar. And Jelani is the baby. Roy,
Tamar scrunched her pretty face.
Roy,
she said again once she ordered the details. Here I am, I said, smiling my salesman's smile. But then I noticed her eyebrow creep, reminding me that I was missing a tooth. I covered my face like I was coughing.
Nice to meet you,
she extended her hand, tipped with blue-green fingernails, the same as the shimmer on her eyelids. Tamar was more like Celestial than Celestial herself. She was the woman I held in my mind when I slept on a dirty prison mattress.
Sit down,
Celestial said.
Let me get you something.
Then she disappeared into the kitchen, leaving me alone with this girl and her baby boy. On the floor, she spread a quilt of various shades of orange and set the baby on top of it. Jelani arranged himself on all fours, rocking.
He taught himself how to crawl.
Does he take after your husband? I asked, trying to make conversation.
Hyper-educated single mother here,
she said, raising her hand.
But yes, Jelani is the spitting image of his daddy. When they are together, people make jokes about human cloning.
She lowered herself onto the floor beside her son, then unwrapped a paper package revealed brown fabric, the same color as her skin. She opened another, several shades darker, and then a third that was the peachy white that crayon companies used to call flesh.
We are the world,
she said.
I believe this is enough to get us through to the new year. Inventory at the shop is pretty low. Celestial is going to have to be a lean, mean sewing machine if she wants to restock. I stay, trying to tell her to let me help, but she says that it's not a poupe if she doesn't sew it herself and write her John Hancock on the booty.
I joined her on the floor, dangling my key ring to get the baby's attention. He laughed, reaching for it. Can I hold him?
Knock yourself out,
she said. I pulled Jelani onto my lap. He struggled against me and then relaxed. Not having much experience with babies, I felt awkward and silly. The scene reminded me of a photo taped to Olive's mirror. Big Roy carrying me when I was little like this. My father looked apprehensive as if he were cradling a ticking bomb. I bounced Jelani, wondering if this was the age I was when Big Roy made me his junior. Celestial returned from the kitchen with 2 champagne flutes with tiny scoops of ice cream floating atop the bubbly. I took a sip and was reminded of Olive. On my birthday, she used to pull out her punch bowl to mix a ginger ale punch with gobs of orange sherbet bobbing on top. Greedy for the memory of it, I tipped the glass again. When Celestial returned with her own glass, mine was almost finished. We sat there, the 3 of us, 4 if you counted the baby. Celestial and Tamar talked about fabric while I kept busy with Jelani. I tickled him under his chin until he gave his little baby laugh that sounded slightly hydraulic. It was amazing to think that here, in my arms, was an entire human being. The son that Celestial and I didn't have would have been 4 or 5, I think. If a kindergartner slept in the back room, there is no way Celestial would be talking about how she's with Andre now. I would say, a boy needs his father. This is a scientific fact. There wouldn't be anything else to talk about. But as things were, there was a lot to talk about. More words than could fit into my mouth.
Celestial. Eventually, Tamar gathered up her little boy, zipping him into a puffy coat that looked like something an astronaut might wear. Roy and I were both sorry to see her go. It was as though we were her parents, and she our busy, successful daughter who could spare only a few minutes for a visit. But we were grateful for every single second. We stood in the doorway, waving as she looked over her shoulder to ease out of the driveway. As she pulled away, her headlights became two more glowing lights on this block bedazzled for the holidays. My own house was dark. I didn't even bother to hang the spruce wreath I'd bought a month ago. Old Hickey was festive, though. A string of lights candy-caned up the thick trunk. This was Andre's work, his effort to assure himself that everything would be all right. Even after Tamar was long gone, I stared down the quiet street and worried about Andre. He was in Louisiana now, trying to do the noble thing. I'd rung him from the store while he was on the road, making his way south. "We're worth it," I told him. How had so much changed in the span of a couple hours? Absently, I reached in my pocket for my phone, but Roy swept my hand to the side. "Don't call him yet. Give me a chance to speak my piece first." But he didn't say anything. Instead, he guided my hands across the break in the bridge of his nose, along the scar at his hairline, small but punctuated twice on each side by pinpoint raised scars. His face, the totality of it, rested in my palms, solid and familiar. "You remember me?" he asked. "You recognize me?" I nodded, letting my arms hang at my side as he explored my features. He closed his eyes as though he couldn't trust them. When his thumb passed my lips, I caught it in a light pucker. Roy responded with a relieved sigh. He led me through the house without turning on the lights, like he wanted to see if he could find his way by touch. A woman doesn't always have a choice, not in a meaningful way. Sometimes there is a debt that must be paid, a comfort that she is obliged to provide, a safe passage that must be secured. Every one of us has lain down for a reason that was not love. Could I deny Roy, my husband, when he returned home from a battle older than his father and his father's father? The answer is that I could not. Behind Roy, in the narrow hallway, I understood that Andre had known this from the start. This is why he raced down the highway to keep me from doing this thing that we all feared I would have to do. How, then, should I classify what transpired between my husband and me the night he returned to me from prison? We were there in the kitchen, me with my back against the granite counter, melted sorbet soaking my clothes. Roy snaked his hands under my blouse. "You love me. You know you do." I wouldn't have answered even if he hadn't cut off my breath with a kiss that tasted like desire, streaked through with anger. Yes means yes, and no means no. But what is the meaning of silence? Roy's body was stronger now than it was 5 years ago when he last slept in this house. He was a commanding stranger, breathing hot on my neck. When he moved us in the direction of the master bedroom, the corner room that had originally belonged to my parents and was the space where Roy and I slept as husband and wife, I said, "Not in there." He ignored me, leading me as though we were dancing. Some things were as unavoidable as the tide. He removed my clothes as easily as you might peel an orange. Then he leaned over to switch on a bright lamp. I was ashamed of my body, 5 years older than when he last saw me this way. Time can be hard on a woman. I drew knees up to my chest. "Don't be shy, Georgia," Roy said. "You're perfect." He gripped my shin, gently tugging my legs straight. "Don't hide from me. Uncross your arms. Let me see you." In the private library of my spirit, there is a dictionary of words that aren't. On those pages is a mysterious character that conveys what it is to have no volition, even when you do. On the same page, it is explained how once or twice in your life you will find yourself bared underneath the weight of a man, but a most ordinary word will save you. "Do you have protection?" I asked him. "What?" he said. "Protection." "Don't say that, Georgia," he said. "Please don't say that." He rolled away from me and we lay parallel. I shifted, looking out the window at Old Hickey, ancestral and silent. Even when Roy planted his weighty hand on my hip, I didn't turn. "Be my wife," he said. I didn't answer. So he flipped me over like a log and pushed his face into the hollow of my throat, wedging his hands between my thighs. "Come on, Celestial," he said. "It's been so many years." "We need protection," I said, filling my mouth with the word, feeling its weight on my tongue. He guided my hand below his rib, where the skin was knotted and rubbery. "I got stabbed," he said. "I never did anything to this dude. Never even looked at him, and he sharpens a goddamn toothbrush and tries to kill me with it." I let my thumb travel over the scar. "You see what I've been through?" he said. "You didn't know what was happening to me. I know that if you knew, you wouldn't have done me like that." He kissed my shoulder and up toward my neck. "Please. We have to use protection," I said. "Why?" Roy said. "Because I was in prison? I was innocent. You know I was innocent. When that lady got raped, I was with you. So you know I didn't do it. Don't treat me like a criminal, Celestial. You're the only one that knows for sure. Please don't treat me like I got some kind of disease." "I can't," I said. "Well, can you at least listen?" He lifted stories from his box of memories, each one making the case for why he shouldn't be forced to put a barrier between us. "I accidentally killed a man," he told me. "I've been through a lot, Celestial. Even if you go in innocent, you don't come out that way. So please, don't beg me," I said. "Please don't do that." He moved closer, pinning me to the bed. "No," I said, "don't do this." "Please," he said. Picture us there in our marriage bed. Me, fixed to the mattress, completely at his grace. But is there any other way? Even when love is true and pure, not dirty with time and betrayal? Maybe that's what it means to be in love, to willingly be at the mercy of another person. I closed my eyes, feeling his weight above me, and I prayed like I was supposed to when I was a little girl. If I should die before I wake, "Protection," I whispered, knowing there was no such thing. "I'm in pain, Celestial. Can't you tell?" And so I lay myself back again, seeing how he had suffered these years, seeing how he suffered then with his head against the pillow. "I know," I said to Roy. "I know." He turned to me. "Is it because you think I got something? That I did something while I was in there? Or is it because you don't want to get pregnant again? Because you don't want to have a baby for me?" There was no acceptable answer to this question. No man welcomes this way of doing it but not doing it, coming close, but only so close. "Tell me," he said, "which one?" I flattened my lips, sealing the truths into myself. I shook my head. He turned, pressing my chest with his own. "You know," he said, with a trace of menace, "I could take it if I wanted to." I didn't struggle. I didn't plead. I braced myself for what seemed fated from the moment I entered my own home and felt that it was no longer mine. I could, he said again. Yet he raised himself from the bed, wrapping the sheet around himself like a winding cloth, leaving me cold and exposed. I could, but I won't.
Roy. Davina didn't do me that way. When I came calling, she opened her home. She opened herself. Celestial, my lawfully wedded, is playing me like Fort Knox. Walter tried to warn me. I was prepared to stomach that there had been another man, maybe even other men. A woman's only human. I'm not naive. Nobody survives prison being cute. But when a woman doesn't divorce you, puts money on your books, and doesn't change the locks on you, under these circumstances, a man might think that he has a chance. And when you lean in to kiss her, she lets you. When you lead her by the hand to a bedroom, you know that you weren't imagining the whole thing. I've been away 5 years, but not so long that I don't remember how the world works. Do you have protection? She knew I didn't. I came to her ready but not prepared. She is my wife. How would she feel if I broke out with a rubber? She wouldn't take it that I was being considerate. She would take it that I thought she had been sleeping around. Why couldn't it be like it was in New York when we were almost strangers? How many times, when I was away, did I recall that first night? I flicked through all the details, a silent movie in my mind, and I guarantee there was no latex on the set. That night in Brooklyn, I felt like Captain America. I didn't even care that I lost my tooth defending her honor. You don't get that many opportunities to be a hero like that. Now, she wants to act like it never happened. I threw the bedsheet to the floor and straggled the house in the buff, searching for somewhere to lay my nappy head. The master bedroom was out of the question for obvious reasons, so I settled myself in the sewing room and flopped on a futon, although I was a little short for a man my size. The room was cluttered with poupées in various stages of creation. Beside the sewing machine was a cloth head, box brown, and a few pairs of arms topped with waving hands. I won't lie and say it wasn't disturbing, but I was already disturbed when I stormed in there. The finished doll sat up on a shelf looking patient and friendly. I thought of Celestial's assistant. Was her name Tamara? I thought of her big, healthy boy. When Celestial left the room to get their coats, the girl touched my arm with her blue-green fingernails. You are going to have to let her go, she said. Break your own heart, or they will break it for you. My anger rose up the way smoke does, thick and suffocating. There was only one thing to say, but it wasn't fit for polite company. I'm telling you, she said, because I know what you don't. It's not going to be on purpose, but you're going to get hurt. I was trying to figure out what kind of game this little girl was playing when Celestial returned with the coats and kissed the baby like he was her own. It was maybe 3 o'clock in the morning. These were drunk thoughts, even though I wasn't drinking. I reached up on the shelf, pulled down one of the dolls, and punched it in the face. The soft head dented before it sprang back, still smiling. I stretched out on the futon with my feet hanging over the edge, but I couldn't get comfortable. I got up, crept down the hallway, and stood outside the room where Celestial was sleeping. But I couldn't bring myself to try the knob. If she locked the door against me, I didn't want to know. Back in the workroom, I picked up the phone and dialed Davina, who answered sounding frightened, as anyone would be at this hour. Hey, Davina, it's Roy, I said.
And?
I wanted to say hello, I told her.
Well, you just did, she said back. Satisfied?
Don't hang up. Please stay on the line. Let me say how much I appreciate you spending time with me, for being so nice.
Roy,
she said with a little melt in her voice.
You safe? You don't sound solid. Where are you?
Atlanta. After that, I didn't have much in the way of words. There's not many women who will hold the phone and listen to a grown man cry over another woman. But Davina Hardrick waited until I was able to say, Davina,
I'm here.
She didn't say, I forgive you, but I was grateful for those two words just the same. I don't know what to do, I said.
Go on to sleep, Like they say, weeping endures for a night.
But joy comes in the morning, I finished. This is the promise spoken at every Baptist funeral. I thought of my mama, and I asked Davina if she had been there for her homegoing. Did you see Celestial and Andre? Were they together then? Davina said.
Why do you care so much?
Because I do.
I'll tell you this. I saw them afterward when I was picking up some hours at the Saturday Nighter for my Uncle Earl. They came in and started getting drunk in the middle of the day, her especially. I don't think they were together, but it was coming. You could taste it on the breeze, like rain on the way. When he went to the bathroom, she leaned across the bar and said to me, I am a terrible person.
She said that? My wife?
Yeah, that was her exact words. Then old boy came back and she got herself together. 5 minutes later, they were gone.
Anything else?
That's all. Later on, your daddy came in, black dirt on his clothes from head to toe. People say he buried your mother with his own two hands.
I held the receiver hard, pressing it against my ear, like that would make me less alone. I wasn't even a week out of prison, and already I felt caged again, like a woman had used a length of clothesline to bind me to a chair. You hear these stories about men who shoplift a beer right in front of the security camera so they can get sent back to the joint, to get back to where they know what to expect. I wouldn't do something like that, but I'm not mystified by the choice. Pulling a soft lap blanket over my hips, I thought about Walter, my father, the ghetto Yoda, and I wondered what he would say about all of this. Davina said,
You there?
Yeah, I said.
Get some rest. It's hard at first for everybody. Take care of yourself,
she said with a calming voice like a lullaby. Davina, I was thinking to tell you something. I've been thinking back.
Yeah.
I remember a boy named Hopper.
Was he okay?
Her voice was so low that I couldn't say for sure that I actually heard it. Yet I knew what she said. He was doing okay. That's why I don't remember him, because there wasn't much to remember. When I hung up, the large orange clock over the sewing machine announced that it was 3:30, a perfect right-angle o'clock. I figured Andre was at my father's house, likely sleeping in my bed, in the dark. I smiled a little bit, picturing Andre's expression when Big Roy told him I was gone to Atlanta. He was probably dressed in jeans and a t-shirt like an average person. But in my mind's eye, he was always wearing that skinny gray suit he wore for my mother's services. Oh, Mama, I thought. What would she think if she could see me now, sleeping on a couch in my own house, surrounded by happy baby dolls that Celestia was going to sell for $150 a pop? Only in Atlanta, I said it out loud before I finally figured out how to sleep.
Andre. Roy's father and I slept in the living room, with me on the couch and him in his recliner chair, like he didn't trust me not to make a break for the door. He didn't need to worry. By the time I covered myself with the crisp sheet and soft blanket, I was tired and ready to close the book on this insane day. The room was quiet except for the hiss of the gas heater in the corner, glowing blue and running hot. Still, we woke up several times in the night and shared a few words.
You want kids?
He asked me, just as I had fallen asleep. Yeah, I do, I said, hoping to return to my dream.
Roy, too. He needs that new beginning.
Feeling claustrophobic under the covers, I wondered if Big Roy knew how close he had come to being a grandfather. I recalled driving home with Celestial, miserable and exhausted. I don't know about Celestial, though. She might not want them, Big Roy said.
She just thinks that she doesn't. Babies bring the love with them when they come.
You and Ms. Olive decided to stop after Roy?
I would have kept going, Big Roy said through a yawn. Fill up the house. But Olive didn't trust me enough. She was scared I would get my own offspring and forget about little Roy. But I wouldn't do that. He was my junior. Still, she went to the doctor and got that taken care of before I even had a chance to bring it up.
Then he was asleep again, or at least not talking.
I lay there counting the hours until morning, fingering my father's chain, doing my best not to think about Roy making his way home. It was dark out when Big Roy rose from his recliner and pointed me in the direction of the bathroom, where he set out fresh towels and a toothbrush. Before I headed for the road, we ate breakfast, coffee and dinner rolls slick with butter. The weather was cool but not cold. We sat on the front porch, our legs dangling.
"You want her,"
Big Roy said, fiddling with the strings on his hooded sweatshirt.
"But you don't need her. You see what I'm saying? Little Roy needs his woman. She is the only thing he has left of the life he had before. The life he worked for."
The coffee, laced with chicory, gave off a sweet tobacco smoke aroma. Although I usually take mine black, Big Roy lightened it with milk and sweetened it with sugar. I drank it down, then set the cup on the concrete floor beside me. I stood up and extended my hand. "Sir," I said. He shook my hand in a manner that felt both formal and sincere.
"Stand down, Andre. You're a good man, I know you are. I remember how you carried Olive. Do the decent thing and stay away for a year or so. If she wants you after a year and you still want her, I won't object."
"Mr. Hamilton, I do need her." He shook his head.
"You don't even know yet what need is."
He waved like he was dismissing me, and without thinking, I moved in the direction of my car, but then I turned back. "This is bullshit, sir." Big Roy regarded me with a confusion, as though a stray cat suddenly started quoting Muhammad Ali. "I'll admit that I have had it better than some, but there are a whole lot who have it better than me, and there are some out there who have it worse than Roy. Be honest. You have to see my point, too. I saw you out there that afternoon in the hot sun struggling with that shovel. You know exactly what it is that I feel."
"Olive and I were married more than 30 years. We went through a lot."
"It doesn't give you the right to talk to me like this, to act like you're God up on a throne. Do I have to go to jail to have a right to try to be happy?" Big Roy scratched his neck where the hair was growing in tight gray curls, then swiped at the standing water in his eyes.
"You have to understand, Andre. The boy is my son. Roy."
Morning came gently. I slept deep and hard until the sound of frying bacon woke me up. I always started the day achy. 5 years lying on a prison bunk will ruin your body. In the light of day, I still found the dolls to be unsettling, but less mocking than they had been at night. "Good morning," I called out in the direction of the kitchen. After a beat, she said,
"Good morning. You hungry?"
"After I have a bath, I will be."
"I put some towels in the yellow bathroom," she said.
Looking down, I remember that I was as naked as a newborn.
"Anybody here?"
"Just us," she said.
Treading down the hall, I was aware of my body, the puckered scar below my ribs, my prison muscles, and my penis. Morning strong, but still disappointed. Celestial was busy in her kitchen, rattling pots and pans, but I felt something like surveillance as I made my way. Safe in the washroom, I saw that she had set my duffel bag on the counter so I would have clothes to wear. Hope woke up with a growl like a hungry stomach. Waiting for the water to heat up, I checked under the sink and discovered some kind of manly shower gel that I figured must belong to Dre. It smelled green, like the woods. I kept rooting around in the cabinet, looking to see what else belonged to him, but I found nothing. No razor, no toothbrush, no foot powder. So Hope gave another little growl, like a Rottweiler puppy this time. Andre didn't live here either. He had his own separate house, even if it was right next door. Under the hot shower, I preferred not to use Dre's soap, but the only other option smelled like flowers and peaches. I cleaned my whole body, taking my time, sitting on the side of the tub, scrubbing the bottoms of my feet and between my toes. I squeezed some more soap and used it on my hair, rinsing myself in water so hot it hurt. Then I dressed myself in my own clothes, bought with my own money. When I got to the kitchen, she had positioned the plates and glasses in front of the chairs that we never used to use.
"Good morning,"
I said again, watching her pour batter onto the waffle iron.
"Sleep well?"
Celestial's face was bare, but she wore a dress made out of sweater material that made her look like she was going out.
"Actually, I did.
Then the hopeful Rottweiler puppy started his thing again. Thank you for asking. She served waffles, bacon-fried crisp, and a fruit cup. She made my coffee black with 3 spoons of sugar. When we were still normal, we sometimes ate brunch at trendy restaurants, especially in the summer. Celestial wore tight sundresses and flowers braided into her hair. With my eyes on my wife, I would tell the waitress that I liked my coffee like I like my women, black and sweet. This always got me a smile. Then Celestia would say,
I like my mimosa like I like my men, transparent.
Before we ate, I opened my hand. I think we should say grace.
Okay.
With bowed head and closed eyes, I spoke. Father God, we ask you today to bless this meal. Bless the hands that prepared it, and we ask you to bless this marriage. In the name of your son, we pray. Amen. Celestial didn't say amen back. Instead, she said,
Bon appetit.
We ate, but I couldn't taste anything. It reminded me of the morning before my sentencing hearing. The county jail served a breakfast of powdered eggs, cold bologna, and soft toast. For the first time since I had been denied bail, I cleaned my plate, because this was the only time that I couldn't actually taste it. Well, I said finally.
I have to go to work, she said. It's Christmas Eve.
Let your twin mind the store.
Tamar already agreed to open for me, but I can't leave her by herself the whole day.
Celestial, I said. Me and you need to talk before...
Before?
Before Andre gets here. I know he's on his way.
Roy,
Celestial said,
I hate the way this is happening.
Listen, I said, hoping to sound reasonable. All I want is a conversation. I'm not saying that we need to take it to the threshing floor. I want things to be cool between us. If we play our cards right, tell each other the truth, I can be gone before Andre even gets... I hesitated. I didn't want to say home. I'll be gone before he even gets back. Celestial stacked my scraped clean plate on top of hers, which was half full of breakfast.
What is there to say?
She said, sounding fatigued.
You know everything that there is to know.
No, I said. I know what you've been doing, but I don't know what you want moving forward. She nibbled her lip like she was thinking, walking through every scenario in her head. When she was finally ready to speak, I wasn't ready to hear it. Let me get my stuff first, I said. Just let me collect my things. Startled, she said.
The clothes went to charity, one that helps men dress for interviews. Everything else I boxed up. I didn't throw out anything personal.
Celestial looked deflated. I missed her defiant cloud of hair. I wanted her back to the way she was when I met her, pretty and a little outrageous. I smiled at her to tell her that I could still see the young lady that she used to be. But then I remembered my jack-o'-lantern grin. My missing tooth was part of my body that should have been with me forever. Teeth are bones at the end of the day, and everyone has a right to their own bones.
Is there anything in particular you need? I made a little inventory sheet on the computer.
All I wanted to take with me was my tooth. For years, I stored it in a velvet box, like what a ring comes in. I couldn't tell her because she would think that I was being sentimental, that I was turning the memory of our first date over in my mouth like a mint. She wouldn't understand that I couldn't leave without the rest of my body. She had made her choice. I could see it in the determined square of her shoulder as she washed my plate and cup. She had chosen what it was going to be, and that was that. Just like a jury in a prefab courtroom had decided that I was a rapist, and that was that. Just like a judge in another shabby courtroom decided I was going to prison, and that was that. When a compassionate judge in D.C. agreed that the prosecutor set me up, so I got free, and that, too, was that. For the last 5 years, people have been telling me what my life is going to be. But what could I do about it? Tell a judge that I'm not going to jail? Tell the DA that I decided to stay? What could I tell Celestial? Could I demand that she love me again? Last night when we were in bed, when she was chanting, protection, protection, for a moment, less than a moment, a micro moment, a nano moment, I thought about showing her that it wasn't up to her. 5 years ago, I swore to a jury that I never violated any woman, Even in college, I never wrestled with a date until things went my way. My boys, some of them, talked about how when you find out a girl has done you wrong, you get her in your bed one more time for one last angry fucking. I was never into beating somebody up with my dick, but I considered it last night for a flash of an instant. I think that's what prison did to me. It made me a person who would even entertain such a thought. The way to the garage is downstairs and then through the laundry room, where a stainless steel washer and dryer hummed, modern and efficient. I entered the garage and flipped the switch, raising the large paneled door. The metal-on-metal noise made me swallow hard. When we first were married, Celestial said that the screech of the garage door made her smile because it meant that I was home from work. In those days, we had been right in there, together on all the levels, mental, spiritual, and yes, physical. But now, it's like she doesn't even know me. Or even worse, it's like she never knew me. What about this, Walter? Nobody prepare me for this? The light of the day brightened the space a little bit. It was Christmas Eve, regardless of what was happening to me. Across the street, a stylish woman moved a dozen poinsettias onto the porch. Kitty corner, light bulb candelabras winked on and off. In the bright of day, I could barely make out the bulbs, but when I squinted, there they were. Directly in my view was that tree that Celestial tended like a pet. It's not like I couldn't appreciate vegetation. When I was a boy, I was partial to a pecan tree, but for a reason. It dropped premium nuts that sold for $1 a sack. Olive cared for a stand of crepe myrtles in her backyard because she delighted in butterflies and blossoms. It was different. Turning my attention back to the great indoors, I saw that the garage was well maintained, and I figured this was Dre's doing. He was always organized. The garage had a showroom vibe to it, too clean for anything to actually have been used. When I lived here, you could smell the dirt on the shovel, the gas in the mower, and the broken twig scent on the clippers. Now each tool was hung on a peg, polished like she was trying to sell it. Everything was labeled, like you needed a little tag to tell you what an axe was. Along the south-facing wall was a cluster of cardboard boxes. Clear block letters, Roy H., miscellaneous. I would have preferred to see only my name, Roy, or Roy's stuff. Even Roy's shit would have been a little more personal. When I left the prison, they gave me a paper sack labeled Hamilton, Roy O., personal effects. And that bag was everything I had on me when I went in, minus a heavy pocket knife that belonged to Big Roy's uncle and namesake, the first Roy. Now I was looking at 6 or 7 not big boxes. All of them could easily fit in the Chrysler. Smarter men like Big Roy or Walter would load it all up and hit the highway. But no, not me. I hauled the stack of boxes out and sat them on the half-circular bench at the base of Old Hickey. Returning to the garage, I searched for something to cut the packing tape, but unless I was willing to use a double-sided axe, there was nothing. I made do with my keys, the very same ones that opened the front door, giving me a bellyful of false hope. The first box contained everything that had been in my top dresser drawer. Things weren't arranged in any kind of order, like she and Andre had opened up the box, pulled a drawer, and poured everything in. A small bottle of cool water cologne was packed along with a few buckled snapshots from my childhood and some pictures of Celestial and me, taken at the beginning. Why wouldn't she at least save the photos? At the bottom of the box were the seedy remnants of a dime bag of weed. In another carton, I found my college diploma, safe in its leather case, which I appreciated. But an egg timer and half-empty prescription for antibiotics? I didn't see the logic in it all. A glass paperweight was cushioned in a purple and gold sweater, which I pulled over my head. It smelled like a thrift store, but I was glad to have something between me and the chill. I didn't care about any of this stuff anymore, but I couldn't stop myself from ripping open box after box, pouring the contents out on the grass and sifting through, hunting for a tiny chip of bone. Looking at the house, I noticed some movement at the window. I imagined Celestial peeking out over my shoulder. I felt the eyes of the lady across the street. There was a time when I knew her name. I waved, hoping that she wasn't getting antsy, thinking of calling the police, because a close encounter with law enforcement was the last thing I needed. She waved back, placed a stack of envelopes in the mailbox, and lifted the red flag. Between Big Roy's Chrysler riding up on the curb and me out here ripping open boxes and trash flying everywhere, it must be the type of ghetto scene they are not familiar with on Lynn Valley Road. Merry Christmas, I called, and offered another wave. This seemed to put her at ease, but not enough that she went back into her house. Highlights from the final box included a mason jar containing bicentennial quarters that had been with me since I was 6, along with a couple of stray keys, but I didn't find my original tooth. I ran my fingers under the cardboard flap in case it was hiding there, but what I found instead was a pale pink envelope bearing my mother's schoolgirl writing in sky blue ink. I sat down on the cold wooden bench and unfolded the page inside. Dear Roy, I am putting this in writing so that you can take this message to heart and not cause confusion with backtalk because you are not going to like what I have to say. So here it is. First, I want to say that I am very proud of you. I may be too proud. There are many at Christ the King who are tired of hearing me talk about you because so many of their youngsters are not doing well. Boys are in jail or headed that way, and the girls all have babies. This is not true for everyone, but it's true enough for there to be a spring of jealousy and envy against me and mine. This is why I pray a prayer of protection for you every single night. I am happy to hear that you have found someone that you want to marry. You know I have always wanted to be a grandmother, though I hope I look too young to be a granny. You do not ever have to worry about taking care of your father and me. We have set aside money since the beginning so that we can manage our bills in old age. So do not think that what I have to say has anything to do with any type of money consideration. What I want to ask you is if you are sure that she is the woman for you. Is she the wife for the real person who you are? How can you know if you have not even brought her to Elo to meet your father and me? I know that you have been spending time with her family, and you are very impressed by them, but we need to meet her too. So come pay us a visit. I promise that will make everything look nice, and I also promise that I will behave. Roy, I cannot say an ill word against a woman that I have not met, but my spirit is troubled. Your father says that I do not want you to grow up. He points out that a lot of spirits were troubled when him and myself jumped the broom. But I would not be your caring mother if I didn't tell you that my dreams have come to me again. I know you don't believe in science, so I am not going to tell you the nitty-gritty, but I am so worried about you, son. Your father could be right. I admit to holding you a little too close. Maybe when I meet Celeste, I'll rest easy again. She does sound nice from what you say. I hope her parents won't think your father and me are a couple of little country mice. Read this letter 3 times before you tell me what you think. I am also including a prayer card, and it would do you some good to pray on this every night. Get on your knees when you talk to the Lord. Do not call yourself praying by lying in the bed thinking. Thinking and praying are 2 different things, and for something this important, you need prayer. Your loving mother, Olive.
I folded the letter and slid it into my pants pocket. The breeze bit, but my body was sweaty. My mama tried to warn me, tried to save me. But from what? At first, she was always trying to save me from 2 things, prison and fast-tailed girls. When I finished high school without catching a charge or getting anyone pregnant, she felt like her work was done. Putting me on that Trailways bus to Atlanta with those 3 brand new suitcases, she held up her fists, crowing, "We did it!" I can't say she worried about me again until I told her I was getting married. I sat myself down on a bench to read the letter again. I didn't believe in Olive's prophetic dreams. Besides, it wasn't celestial that was my undoing. It was the state of Louisiana. Still, I took some comfort in the tenderness lacing my mama's words. But I was cut to the quick remembering how I'd reacted all those years ago. I responded, hemming and hawing, but I was a hit dog, hollering. "Don't be ashamed of us," she said without saying. I read the letter over again and again, each word a lash. When I couldn't take it anymore, I slid it back into my pocket and looked at the mess I'd made with the boxes. Something as small as a bottom tooth could be easily lost among the rubble, easily hidden between blades of grass. Maybe it was only fitting that I move into this uncertain future without it. The grave robbers of the next millennium would find me incomplete for all eternity, the story of my life there in my jaw. I swear to God my plan was to leave right then. I would gas up Big Roy's car and get back on the highway, taking nothing with me but my mama's letter. But then I thought I spotted a tennis racket in the garage. It had been expensive, and more important, it was mine. Maybe I would give it to Big Roy. When I was little, we used to hit tennis balls at the rec center in town. I walked up the sand-white driveway, thinking of Davina and what Celestial told her after Olive's funeral. Georgia, I called to the air, you are not the only one who's a terrible person. I scanned the garage wall. Sure enough, the racket dangled from a little hook. I pulled it down and found it to be warped with age and disuse. When I bought this racket, it was the finest to be had in all of Hilton Head. Now it was reduced to corroding metal and catgut. The grip had gone gummy, but I mimed my backhand, butting up against the bumper of Celestial's car. The first blow was an accident. The second, third, and fourth were more purposeful. The car alarm squealed in protest, but I didn't stop until Celestial entered the garage with her bag on her shoulder and her keys in her hand.
Honey, what are you doing?
She used a little remote to silence the alarm.
You okay?
The pity in her voice scraped over my skin.
I'm not okay. How am I supposed to be okay?
She shook her head, and again there was that soft sadness. I have never struck a woman. Never have I wanted to. But at that moment, my hand itched to slap all that concern off her lovely face.
Roy,
she said,
what do you want me to do?
She knew full well what I wanted her to do. It wasn't that complicated. I wanted her to be a proper wife and provide a place for me in my own home. I wanted her to wait for me like women have been waiting since before Jesus. She kept talking, but I didn't have any patience for damp cheeks and noise about how she tried. Try spending some time as a special guest of the state of Louisiana. Try that. How hard could it be to stay off your back for 5 years? How hard could it be to make a tired man feel welcome? I picked soybeans when I was in prison. I have a degree from Morehouse College, and I'm working the land like my great-great-granddaddy. So don't tell me about how you tried. She was sniffling when I attacked the car again. The tennis racket wasn't much match for the Volvo. I couldn't even bust out the windows. I did get the alarm to wail, but Celestial silenced it immediately.
Roy, stop it,
she said, sighing like an exhausted mother.
Set down that tennis racket.
I'm not your child, I said. I'm a grown man. Why can't you talk to me like I'm a man?
I couldn't stop seeing myself through her eyes, hot and funky in my Walmart clothes and high school sweater and swinging a raggedy tennis racket like some kind of weapon. I dropped it to the floor.
Can you please calm down?
I scanned the neatly labeled rows of tools, hoping to find a heavy wrench or a hammer that I could use to bust out every window on that vehicle. But there, just at arm's length, was the double-sided axe, and I liked the look of it. Lo and behold, as soon as I got my hand around that thick wooden handle, the room leaned in a different direction. Celestial sucked in her breath, and there was raw fear on her face. This grated, too, but it was better than her pity. I lifted the axe as best I could, and I cramped space between the Volvo and the garage wall. The window burst, sending safety glass everywhere. But even though she was terrified, Celestial had the presence of mind to again turn off the alarm, keeping things quiet. Still gripping the axe, I walked toward her as she shrank back. I laughed. You think I'm dangerous now? Do you know me at all? I walked out of the garage with the axe slung over my shoulder like Paul Bunyan, feeling like a man. Stepping out into that cold, sunny day, I was set to head back to Elo with nothing but the axe, my mama's letter, and the fear in my wife's eyes. Isn't there something in Genesis about not looking back? A stupid glance over my shoulder showed her expression relaxing. Glad I wasn't taking anything that couldn't be replaced, and glad I didn't destroy anything that couldn't be repaired. Do you care for me, Georgia? I asked her. Tell me you don't, and I'm out of your life forever. She stood in the driveway with her arms wrapped around herself like she was freezing.
Andre is on his way.
I didn't ask you about no Andre.
He'll be here in a minute.
My head hurt, but I pressed her.
It's a yes or no question.
Can we talk when Andre gets back? We can...
Stop talking about him. I want to know if you love me.
Andre...
She said his name one time too many. For what happened next, she would have to take some of the blame. I asked her a simple question, and she refused to give me a simple answer. I turned from her and made a sharp left turn, pounding across the yard, feeling the dry grass crunch under my shoes. 6 long strides put me at the base of the massive tree. I touched the rough bark, an instant of reflection, to give Old Hickey the benefit of the doubt. But in reality, a hickory tree was a useless hunk of wood. Tall, and that's all. To break the shell of a hickory nut, you needed a hammer and an act of Congress. And even then you needed a screwdriver to get at the meat, which was about as tasty as a clod of limestone. Nobody would ever mourn a hickory tree except Celestial, and maybe Andre. When I was a boy, so little I couldn't manage much more than a George Washington hatchet, Big Roy taught me how to take down a tree. Bend your knees, swing hard and low, follow up with a straight chop. Celestial was crying like the baby we never had, yelping and mewing with every swing. Believe me when I say that I didn't slow my pace, even though my shoulders burned and my arms strained and quivered. With every blow, wedges of fresh wood flew from the wounded trunk, peppering my face with hot bites. "Speak up, Georgia," I shouted, hacking at the thick gray bark, experiencing pleasure and power with each stroke. "I asked you if you loved me."
"Andre, I expected to come home to psychological chaos. But when I pulled my truck to the end of Lynn Valley Road, what I encountered was more physical than emotional. The yard was strewn with cardboard and other garbage. Celestial was standing in the driveway dressed for work, sobbing into her fists, while Roy Hamilton was hacking away at Old Hickey with my double-sided axe. I hoped that I was hallucinating. After all, I had been driving for a long time, but the piercing thwack of metal against green wood convinced me that the scene was real. Celestial and Roy both spoke my name at the same time, striking a peculiar chord. I was torn, not sure which of them to respond to, so I asked a question that either of them could answer. "What the hell is going on?" Celestial pointed at Old Hickey as Roy gave another gutsy swing, leaving the axe buried in the tree, like a sword stuck in a stone. In the driveway, I stood midway between them, 2 separate planets, each with its own gravitational pull and orbit. The sun glinted overhead, giving light, but not heat.
"Look who's here," Roy said. "The 3rd most terrible person in the world."
He picked up the tail of his shirt to mop his perspiring forehead.
"The man of the hour."
He smiled broadly, looking snaggletoothed and unscrewed. The axe jutted from the tree, immobilized. I don't know that I would have recognized Roy if I had run into him on the street. Yes, he was the same Roy, but prison made him bulky. Deep grooves creased his forehead, and his shoulders caved a little toward his overdeveloped chest. Although we were roughly the same age, he seemed much older, but not in that elder statesman way like Big Roy. He was more like a powerful machine that was wearing out. "What's up, Roy?"
"Well,"
he looked up at the sun, not bothering to shield his eyes.
"I got locked up for a crime I didn't commit, and when I get home, my wife is hooked up with my boy."
Celestial walked toward me like this was any other day and I had just returned from work. By habit, I curled my arm around her waist and kissed her cheek. The touch of her was reassuring. No matter what had happened in my absence, I was the one holding her now. "You okay, Celestial?"
"Yes, she's okay," Roy said. "You know I wouldn't hurt her. I'm still Roy. She may not be my wife, but I'm still her husband. Can't y'all see that?"
He held his hands up as if to show he was unarmed.
"Come talk to me, Dre. Let's sit down like men."
"Roy," I said, "everybody can see we got a conflict here. What can we do to squash it?" After I released Celestial, my arms felt useless. "It's all right," I said to her, but I was really trying to convince myself. Joining Roy in the don't shoot salute, I advanced toward Old Hickey. The odor of the exposed wood was oddly sweet, almost like sugarcane. Displaced chunks of wood littered the grass like misshapen confetti.
"Let's talk," Roy said. "I'm sorry about what I did to your tree. I got carried away. A man has feelings, you know. I have a lot of feelings."
He swept the wood chips from the seat. My father built this bench, I said, when I was little.
Dre,
he said, is that all you